Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a house. And if I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Buy you furniture for your house. Maybe a nice Chesterfield or an Ottoman. And if I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a K-car, a nice Reliant automobile.
I got blisters on my fingers!
When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top and decide. When I stop and I test and I go for a ride. Till I get to the bottom, I see you again.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm second late here, but we have Ian Kidwell with us this morning doing it by himself. Maddie Weber is at home. So, Ian, you're on for pretty much the week here. Are you ready, bud?
I'm ready. Good morning.
How are you? Glad to have you here, bud. SP Futures down 750. NASDAQ Futures down 29. Had a huge rally yesterday. Anybody watching the market? But it was kind of an odd day. I mean, it's not really a holiday, Easter Monday. I mean, obviously not a holiday here, but it is kind of around the rest of the world. So you end up with, look at the numbers from yesterday. I mean, they were pretty impressive. Dow was up 373. That's 1.1%. S&P up 58. 1.4. NASDAQ up 225, 1.7. But we sort of were there at 930. We closed there at 305. So wasn't much of a day to trade, but it was just standing there watching. But it was up, and, it, you know, that part's good, I guess. Ian, it's kind of weird when you have money that you've invested for people, and obviously you want the market to go up. I mean, even mm-hmm. though we do a protected stuff, you still want the market up. I mean, we're long everywhere. I mean, we're not as long as other people because we have protection, but we are long. So you really do want it to go up, but it reaches a point where you like things to be in somewhat of an equilibrium. You like to be in a price where things are, I'll use the term, you know, I won't say defendable, but a price that you sort of like. But if it just keeps going up and up and up and you sit there and go, gee, I couldn't, you know, I don't know if I really would pay this for this stock anymore. But then again, I can't sell it because I got nowhere to go with my money. And you know, I mean, it ends up being a real questioning sort of thing. But so what do we do? I mean, I'm never smart enough to know when the top is going to be or anything like that, or even if there's going to be a top. But you just keep nudging your protection up, where if it turns, you keep locking in some of the move up. You just keep locking it in. And then at the end of the day, somebody says, well, what did you buy any protection for at all? We didn't need that, you know, type of thing, because all it does is go up. And yet you stare at it, you look at it, and you wonder why people continually go down the same road that it is a road that is fraught with you know, folly. And that's just what we're doing. I mean, you look at some of these stacks, and I don't honestly know collectively what people think is going to happen. I mean, it happened, you know, 1999 was the same way, and you look at it and you say, God, for every one of these, I mean, if you were to take the top, if you were to go through it, I'm guessing, because I did this before in 99, and actually spent a couple of days doing it. If you went through the top 20 or 25 stacks, with, you know, there were all kinds of, there were the Broadcoms, there was those kinds of things in 1999. And you went through all of them, and you, you know, let's say put pen on paper. Nobody does that anymore. But if you put pen on paper and you actually said, okay, this stock has to, for this company to be worth this price, in normal terms, whatever the hell normal is, but in 1999 interest rates were normal, let's say traditionally normal. Well, now we're at a point where, you know, 1%, I guess, is normal. But if you actually put down, okay, eBay, for instance, was one of the real high flyers. All right, for eBay to actually make, you know, say even 15, 20 times earnings and send you a dividend check, you know, this is what would have to happen. This is what their margin would have to be. This is how much more revenue they'd have to have. And if you did that with, like, 20, 30, 35 stocks that were all these high flyers, you start adding up the numbers. I mean, the GDP would have to grow like exponentially for these stocks to all be able to grow into their prices. You know, to the point where you sit there and say, wow. You know, and the same thing happened with housing before 2007. And this is, it's closer to home because everybody knows Audrey is in the, my significant other is in the real estate business, and she's still with PTI, but mostly what she does now is real estate. And, so she, you know, real estate people, it's always a great buy. Everything is relative value. Right? Which is very true. If this house is worth, you know, 280, another one's got another bedroom, it's worth 295. I mean, you know, right? I mean, it's common sense, correct? But when you look at something, you say, okay, now wait a minute. All these houses are priced here, and all these people make X. Now, there's a time when most people, the median person, can afford the median house. And you might say, well, that's equilibrium, right? I mean, the people can afford. There's the salaries matching the prices of houses and things like that. And there's, you know, whether, and that generally is a pretty good thing. You know, I mean, how often it happens is another question. But like, I mean, right now, if you were somebody who, you know, looked at individual prices, and said, how big does the cloud area have to be for every one of these cloud companies to grow into their price? I mean, I can't even imagine what the revenue would have to be in that area. And the earnings would have to be and the margins would have to be. Now, that doesn't mean it won't happen. And maybe the market's betting on the fact that the amount of money into the system that we have, that it'll just be a nominal amount of money and that the reality will never catch up, but the nominal amount of money will, which means the dollars in the system, that everything will just be worth twice as much, even though their margins never really go up. And it's very possible, but whenever you see things out of equilibrium, or don't seem like they match up, I won't say equilibrium, it's too strong of a word. To me, it always seems like there's a problem there. And, you know, whether it's a problem that ever comes to any kind of a collision is another story. I mean, it may not. It may last like that for 2 decades. I mean, it sort of already has lasted for quite a while. I mean, I never thought interest rates would be 1% for a while, because after all, why would an entire economy be built on a horrible trade? Why would somebody ever give somebody else their money for 0.5%, 1%, or in Europe, you know, -%? Why would you ever do that? And yet people appear to have, or at least the central banks have, and somehow have gotten away with it. So it's, you know, it's, I mean, you ask these questions. One thing you can't do, and I certainly would, we have Brendan? We have something. We're having problems.
No, Brendan.
I just have you?
Yeah, just me.
Well, there's a good thing.
You know, I was, I gotta say, you were talking about 1999 earlier, and I just wanted to add, I was one then, so the analogy was not holding for me.
Well, but I've become somewhat of a well-read person in World War II, but I wasn't here for that.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's just one of those things. Anyway, so the what I'm saying is you look at the history stuff, and the economic history is kind of just right there. I mean, it's not like it's one thing's for sure is when you you're going to be going to law school, right? So I don't know if you guys are going to take much economics, but if you ever did, I mean, the economic history, It's like the history of people. I mean, you read. I mean, I'll mention this because
I've taken a class or two.
A class or two. Well, that's cool. But I'm saying, if you look at the behavioral aspects of it, and you look at what happened to Rome, it's kind of the same thing that happened. I mean, what people end up doing and how you end up with a certain thing is your money, okay? And over a period of time, you debase your money, essentially, and you end up making it less. I mean, we had, used to be $35 to an ounce of gold in this country. Now it's like, what, $35,000 to an ounce of gold? I mean, you end up, but I mean, every country has sort of done this along the way. And not really lived to tell about it. So there's enough written history. You know, it's sort of like if you were to read something, you don't have to walk off a cliff to know that it's dangerous. If you read about 1,500 other people before, you'd have walked off this cliff and all died, right? I mean, you don't have to jump off the Golden Gate to know that it's a bad idea, because everybody else who's done it has died, right?
Yeah, I can observe.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, didn't one guy survive a few years ago?
Well, I heard that when people jump off bridges, they survive, but usually it's not pretty.
Yeah, well, you know what they say. Halfway down, the guy can say, all right so far. But no, I mean, when you look at what's happening and you look at the policy and people are, and you look at the amount of money that's being bandied about by the federal government, I mean, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, whatever side of the political argument, I think most anybody would probably say, you know, maybe not. There's some people who think the government's the answer. But even those people, in certain ways, and how can I say this politically correctly? Like an Elizabeth Warren is absolutely convinced that that the government's the solution. And yet when she gets the Fed or anybody else, any of the regulators in front of her, I mean, she scolds them and slaps them like she's the aunt you don't want. So she's convinced that they're the solution, but they're just incompetent. So she's very conflicted on her own, you know, because she thinks they're the solution, yet every single time they seem to disappoint her in how they perform. And, you know, it's not her fault. It's not like she doesn't wish that they would do better. They just never do. Every single time there's a crisis, they seem to be, you know, three steps behind the crisis. And it's, you know, that's just the way it is. And other people would say that's why you don't necessarily want to put your faith in this bureaucracy, because it doesn't necessarily work and they never seem to do a good job. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the interesting part. And then when you have, when you look at antitrust with all kinds of things, you see that they never actually do what they're supposed to do. But her solution is always more government. I mean, we need to give the SEC more money because they didn't see the last four crises coming. Maybe it's just a bad idea the way they're set up. Maybe it's just a bad idea that the firms seem to own them. That you can't break the antitrust issue that you never pursue against the regulatory issue. Maybe the two of them together are just, they're two gorillas in the same room. They can't play nice with each other. You can't have that much power. And you can't and try and regulate it over a long period of time. You know, maybe you just can't do it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but we never ask those kinds of questions. So, you know, right now you look at the market. I mean, government is all over this thing. Now, if anybody can't figure out that the market going up every single day, that isn't somehow correlated with the money pouring into the system. I mean, anybody who says, okay, take this for Ian. Anybody who thinks that the market shouldn't be going up as we seem to be spinning out of a horrendous thing with this COVID. I mean, there's no doubt the economy's picking up. Look at the numbers last week in the labor. Even Carl said it's an A-minus, B-plus report. The idea that this week is moderately bullish, you know, is that shouldn't be a shock to anybody. But should we be higher than before the whole thing mess even started? Does anybody think for a second that the average person in this country is in better shape than he was a year, 13 months ago? I mean, come on. Now, clearly some people are tremendously better off that have had their nose in the government trough and all you could see was their behind for a year because their nose was in the trough. Those people are doing fine. Now, you got to ask yourself, are we getting a narrower and narrower view of the world through the stock market? Of course, my job is for my people to make sure I'm in the right stocks. Okay, so that part's good, but there's many levels to this argument. That part's good. I mean, if I can run XYZ that's worth nothing, And if I can put my people in at 100 and it goes to 200, guess what? I'm happy as a clam, even though I can't wait to get out of 200 because I think the thing's worth four. I mean, you know, that's, you do that even though you question whether or not, I mean, maybe that's why I always have protection, because what if the Grim Reaper comes when I'm along with stuff? Type of thing. But then you look at those things and you say, well, okay, what exactly is happening here? Now, why are we trying to make like there's no problem? But now, at the end of the day, if you've got 15 restaurants, just for an example, I have no idea how many there are. Say you have 20 restaurant chains that are in the S&P 500. Okay, and all of a sudden, you know, 80,000 restaurants go out of business. And the 20 chains are now 40% of the restaurant business instead of 20. Well, they could actually be more value, and the S&P could actually go up. But does that mean that the country is healthier? I'm thinking the answer is no. So clearly, when you look yesterday at the prices on the market, what it's telling you, I mean, if you have any ounce of brains, okay, and you look at the market, you see what's happening yesterday. Walmart was they're putting a whip to Walmart, Target, Home Depot, those places. They now are massive monopolists. Not monopolists, but they have tremendous parts of the market. Right now, today, if there's pricing power, it's in those places. Target has been given the city of Chicago, pretty much. Now, if Target raised every one of their prices across the board tomorrow 30%, what exactly could you do about it, Ian? What if Home Depot did? I mean, you know, you've got the apartment, you want to go out and buy a new electrical fixture.
A drying rack.
Wait, where the hell are you going to go?
Oh, well, I'd go to Target. That's what I did when I was moving in.
But, I mean, an electrical fixture, you probably wouldn't.
Electrical fixture. I mean, I guess I'd check Amazon, but I'd...
You know, it's pretty hard to buy an electrical fixture online.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. If you suggested to the girlfriend when you guys finally get a place together, and you're going to buy 15 electrical fixtures, you're going to buy them online, I think she's going to disown you right that second.
I'll keep that in my pocket.
Yeah, then. If ever you want to really break up a couple, all you have to do is say, here's your home, why don't you go out and pick out the 40 electrical fixtures? Because, boy, talk about taste and different tastes and different stuff. If it was Audrey and me, I'd say, I'll take the basement, you take the rest of the place. The thought of going, I like that one, no, I like that one, and that's only like number one and you got 39 to go, that would be tough.
Yeah, I could foresee that being a problem.
Yeah, it's like, you know, getting paint colors, sort of the same thing. You know, why don't you just pick them out and I'll just live what you got, type of thing. But, I mean, the immense power at these places. I mean, where are you going to go for the sheet of plasterboard in our neighborhood if you're not going? I guess we could go to Menards. There's not even a Lowe's around. So, okay, our choice is Home Depot or Menards. Well, they have pricing power. The Home Depot didn't lose a wink of sleep over the doubling of the lumber prices this year. They just really raised them. Where else are you going to go? I mean, and would have allowed. So there's people that have this pricing power, and guess what? They're doing just fine. Now, are other places doing so fine? No, but nobody cares about them. 2 years after they're out of business, you even forget they were there, right? It's just, it's one of those bizarre deals. Anyway, and the sports thing, we'll talk more about that when Joel calls in, but. Well, everybody was all fired up for that big game last night, and I think those guys left their heart on the floor on Saturday night. It's basketball. It can really change one night to the other. That's why you see these NBA teams in a 7-game series where one team will blow somebody out one night, and the next night the other team wins. I mean, basketball is an interesting game in that regard. And last night, Barrow just came out hot, and the other guys could never really do much afterward, and they were in control the whole way. Now, if they played again a week from now, you know, I think it might be different, but they won't. So we have not had an undefeated team since Indiana in 1976, which is really hard to do all the way to the end game. But Baylor's pretty darn tough. I mean, it was a pretty good game last night. I don't know why the 8:20 start was there necessarily, but not my call. But anyway, so I think the NCAAs were, compared to not having any last year, were quite the success, and I think everybody enjoyed them. A lot of great games, and interesting. It's a lot of stuff. A lot of things are different there. The amount of people that are shifting teams. I wonder where that's all going to be, and I wonder where that's all going to end up. Where the constant recruitment while people are at another place. I mean, is that I guess that ends after this year with the COVID thing, but I wonder if it really will. The idea that anybody can just go from place to place and start on a new team. And the idea was, well, you know, when I was talking about how long ago it was, you know, when I was in school, freshmen could not play varsity, right? So the idea was that you're actually going to school to learn something, you know, go figure. And the idea was a freshman really couldn't handle, you know, varsity athletics. So the freshman team played, you know, whatever, probably 20 basketball games to schools right around the area. I mean, they did something. And they would practice with the varsity sometimes, but basically it was a year to get acclimated, and then you played sophomore, junior, senior, and most people didn't go to the pros till they were seniors. And a couple of guys went early, Moses Malone and a few other people, but it started the whole mess, but, well, started the whole different era. And, but you really never had anybody, well, I won't say never, but you very rarely had people transfer school to school, because you're already there a year. You're already sort of locked into class. So by the time you decide you didn't even like it, was probably sophomore year. The idea was that once the signing day came up and you decided I'm going to Illinois, I'm going to, well, I'm going someplace, that all that stuff was over. All the people, you know, bugging the hell out of your parents and you and everything else, that sort of ended when you signed with wherever, you know, state or wherever you went to. The idea of that while you're in your dorm room, the phone ringing and somebody from Oklahoma wanting you to transfer from Texas, I mean, nobody wanted that. So the rules were if you transferred for whatever reason, and there were a lot of reasons to transfer. I mean, these coaches, when I talk about people that would lie to people, I mean, I knew guys from Notre Dame, a few guys that had transferred, by the way, that they'd say, some coach would say, you know, I need you, you're my, I got another guy coming that can play guard, maybe center, but you're going to be my center for the next 3 years, and blah, blah, blah. And they'd show up, and there's like five centers there, type of thing. I mean, these coaches have no, absolutely, well, I won't say any of them, but most of them have zero, you know, shall we say, affinity with the truth. And so guys would say, I'm never going to play here. And they would, or the other side of the coin is the coach would try and drive them off. You know, they'd figure, you know, a guy like you, you're a spectacular high school player, and you're supposed to grow, you know, 2 inches, and you're and put on 15 pounds in your senior year to freshman year, and you show up, and you're the same size, and you haven't gained any weight, and they go, we don't want this Ian guy, he hasn't grown. You can't play tackle in a, you know, for a Division I team. So they would find a way to make it miserable enough for you where you would quit. So there was all kinds of stuff going on, but generally, you didn't have other schools calling you up saying, hey, Ian, we know you're not starting there, would you like to have you here? But now, it has to be way out in the open now. And these calls, well, now, you know, I guess you can text people and stuff. But in those days, it was pretty obvious because you're calling somebody's dorm room, right? I mean, because that was the only phone.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine there being a phone in a dorm.
Well, the first thing you did when you got to school, to college, was every room had a phone. And you got a card with your ID, if you wanted it, but everybody got one. You had a card with your ID on it that when you dialed home, for instance, a long distance call, you used that code and that particular bill went to your bill. But any phone call on campus or at Notre Dame, we could call St. Mary's, any local call was included. And it was only the long distance stuff home that you had to pay for. Well, pay extra for.
And what if you memorized your friend's number?
That happened a lot. Or people just used a random number and they trace it to the phone. I mean, there were guys that, you know, that did all kinds of games and they would be found with like a $200 bill back in those days, where $200 was like a real lot of money. But usually, you know, the parents would say, just use that to call home, and by the way, I'll pay that, type of thing. But you know what? The thing of it is, you know, it wasn't ideal, but it worked. You know, and I mean, I knew everybody's, when we played, you know, I was the organizer, imagine that. Every night we played basketball, we played softball. I knew everybody's, you'd call somebody's house, you'd call your house, you know, because we're letting you know the game starts at 7:30, and your mom would answer the phone, and I was always on first name relationship with everybody's mom, you know, and then the mom would say, what time do you guys start tonight? I'll make sure he's there, type of thing. You know, so it was just a different world. Everybody knew everybody in the family because they at some point or another they all picked up the phone when you called, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the mother would immediately know if there were like new friends on the horizon that she didn't know. And boy, the antenna went up, right? Who's that guy? He's not from around here. Where'd he come from? I mean, it was just a different, in some ways it was somewhat intrusive, but in a lot of ways it was a hell of a lot safer when everybody kind of knew everybody, right? I mean, it was just different. I mean, anytime something's different, there's pluses and minuses, but when people, now they'd say, God, what are you going to that guy's mom's wake for? Don't you understand? I talk to the guy's mom every day for 15 years. What do you mean, why am I going to the wake type of thing? I knew her as much as I did him. But you got to the point where you knew all these people. And anyway, it was just different. And everybody had the huge extension cord in the kitchen where you could run to the other room if it was kind of a private call. Then everybody had like a phone. Then the parents had a phone in the bedroom and maybe you had a phone in the basement. That was it. Scary world. I mean, for you guys, but for us, it was, did you see, hopefully this wouldn't be you. Did you see the parents that gave their kids the rotary dial phone, the kids trying to figure out how to use it?
No, I didn't see that. I know how to use a rotary dial phone.
You're doing the show after 3 days, so you're a little bit of a step above. But the look on those kids' faces was wild. The one guy's going, well, what do? You just like press the 7? The guy goes, well, that's not doing anything. Well, maybe you need to spin it. Well, we got to spin it all the way. Well, how does this thing even work?
Oh my God!
Yeah, it was.
Have they not seen a movie or something with it in it?
Well, not too many. When I was real young, I was real, real young. You actually picked up the phone. And there was no dial. You told the operator where you wanted to call. Imagine that.
Sounds odd.
When you picked the thing up, there'd an operator answer, and you'd say, "I want to dial," whatever. And every one of the numbers had a word in front of it. So the first two letters, nobody would say 243. The first two were letters. So like in Evergreen Park, it was considered it was like the garden community. So everything in Evergreen Park was garden three, type of thing. Instead of 42, it was garden three. And, in other areas was Boulevard. If you were on 55th Street, you were on the Boulevard. So your number was Boulevard 8 type of thing. It was really, you could see how this kind of grew, because nobody really needed an area code in the city. It wasn't until everybody in the entire area was 312. Three, and everyone had to dial the area code. You imagine that in your lifetime, I think you always had to dial the area code, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, before that, you didn't have to. You only had to dial the area code if you were going outside of your city or whatever. It was just different. Anyway, S&P futures up, down 750, NASDAQ futures down 3350. Come back, we'll have Mr. Joel Ankainen, and we'll talk a little bit more about the games last night.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Ian Kidwell on the board. S&P futures up down 7.50. Nasdaq futures down 32.25. We were up huge yesterday. It was a minor little pullback here. I wouldn't exactly put this in your bearish column, at least not yet. Dow down 33, individual stocks. Not really anything moving. Again, yesterday is a kind of a sneaky day because it was a holiday most of the world, just not for us. So Europe is now reopened, so they were not open yesterday. So the DAX is up 179, 1.1, so it's just a little bit of catch-up. FTSE up 82, 1.2%. CAC around up 38.3%. We're in Asia, the only one that was open was a Nikkei. Now they're down. They're down 392, which is 1.3%. Shanghai, which was closed yesterday, they're down a buck, so they're unchanged. Hang Seng, which was closed yesterday, they're up 560, which is 2%. So, actually, you know what? They're not, that was they're still not open, Hang Seng. That was a Friday number for Hang Seng, so I don't know why they're not open, but they are not. Again, as a review of yesterday, Dow Jones is up 373, that's 1.1%, S&P up 58, 1.4, NASDAQ up 225, 1.7. Today we've got the bonds, down 3 basis points at 169. The one positive one, it's still the same spot though, minus 0.30. And then we got the Japan, sort of the same spot, positive 0.11. We've got oil up $1.04, but still not back to 60 bucks, 59.69. Brent, up 98 cents, 63.13. Natural gas up 5 cents, 256. RBOB down, up 2 cents, 198. Still the trade of the year last year, if you could have done it, it's a big contract. I mean, so no retail people can do it. We used to have a couple of people back in the day that traded natural gas futures, but they had a lot of money, and they knew the business pretty well. But natural gas, I think, traded down almost to $2, traded over 3, and now it's 256. Boy, buy them, sell 2, and then buy it back here would have been a nice year. I don't know anybody did that. Gold up 650, 1735. Silver up 23 cents, 2501. Copper down 6 cents, but still over $4 at 407. And we've got crypto. We got Bitcoin down 510 at 58,450. But it's kind of quiet the last few days. Ian, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? We got some sports.
Some sports. Baylor won against Gonzaga last night, 86-70. Other than that, the Hawks and the Bulls are not playing over the holiday weekend. For traffic, the Chicago traffic is clear today, this morning. No accidents. It's a good day to be a driver.
Yep.
The weather is a high of 77, cloudy. Not rainy like yesterday. Clear. And in Phoenix, there's a high of 90, and it's also cloud and rainless.
Joel, are you with us, bud?
Morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
How you doing, Chief?
I'm doing all right. Did you like the outcome of the game? I think those guys were just kind of tired from Saturday night. I think they were a little hangover. What'd you think? Or is Baylor that good?
Well, first of all, Chief, I wish I would have been on yesterday because just something in my old creaky bones told me Baylor was going to win that game. And what it was, there's two things. One is the eyeball test. I mean, did you see those Baylor players? Like the starting five and into the bench. I mean, these guys are just studs,
yeah.
And they're big. Also, I think losing makes you a better team. And, you know, going undefeated like that, and having that close call against UCLA, and I'll go into that Michigan-UCLA game in a second, losing games are learning opportunities. And it was just a lot of pressure on them. So, I 4.5 points, I mean, that was a juicy spread. The Michigan-UCLA game, one of the most excruciating Michigan events of my entire lifetime. Not scoring the final 5:22, a field goal, just, I mean, my poor wife, Lisa, I'm like, every shot, I'm like, it's going in. No! It's going in. No! That was so, it took me a while to, I'm still not over it. So, of course, I was cheering hard for Gonzaga. And then Gonzaga beat UCLA, and I was happy. And then I really don't know Michigan without Livers if they could have really handled Baylor. I mean, they were just stacked. So the season's over. Elite Eight. You can't be disappointed with that. Big recruiting class coming in. I don't know who's coming back because of this whole, you know, COVID thing. But man, you just got to be happy with Juwan Howard and, now we're officially a basketball school, so we don't have to talk football next fall at all.
Just talking to B-ball. Well, the Irish are now a fencing school. 11 national championships, you know.
They still got that Mike Bray there?
Yeah, he's still there, although this year was a rough one for him in a lot of ways. I haven't said anything about it on the air. One of these days maybe we'll come clean.
Yeah, they got to show him the door. I mean, Notre Dame basketball, I mean, I can't. I mean, what, did they advance in the tournament a few years ago?
I can't remember. Well, he was, I'm going to say for a period of, up until this year, they were quietly one of the best programs in the country in the ACC, considering who they were up against, and they did very well, and then they, exceptionally well, considering, you know, the lack of emphasis that's kind of put on it there, but he always got the most out of guys and did stuff and those kinds of things without any of the, I mean, his main job is to not screw up the football program, right? This year they had some internal issues that have not, shall we say,
tough year. I mean, you know, tough. I mean, COVID, I mean, you can't, you know, use it for a pass, but I mean, you know, Michigan had that 23-day layoff. I think they recovered from it. It was just a weird year, but, you know, I can't say, like, I'm a huge Baylor fan. You know, it's not like they run the cleanest program down there.
No.
I shouldn't say that, but, you know, it's time to move on, Chief. Move on to baseball season, and I don't know about my Tigers this year. They're 2-3, and good start out of the gate, but I just don't have a lot of confidence in that the general manager, Al Avila. Nothing against Al personally. I just don't know why, you know, he's been able to stick around so long and the progress has been so little.
Well, the Cubs have zeroed in this year, and you know, the first week is, after all, the first week, right? But it seems like they, by getting rid of Yu Darvish, or trading him, and dropping him in a scrap heap, they kind of went for the, if I'm going to spend, you know, $25 million on pitching, I want, like, two or three guys. And they went with the really kind of three somewhat experienced, you know, maybe even older, but, you know, solid number three starters. So everybody's pretty much even down the line. The ace is probably Hendricks, but he's not Yu Darvish, I don't think. And it's, so the first week it's worked out very well for them. They've gotten a good start out of everybody. And, cause they really don't have a clunk anywhere in the rotation, you know, but they also don't have a Sandy Koufax either. So, but I think it's, you're going to find that the last thing you want to do is give all your money to one guy and then the guy gets hurt or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. Chief, before I forget, and I'll send you guys an email, I'm out next Tuesday.
Yeah? Is your guy, whenever he gets in, he always tries to take your place? Is he going to be calling in?
I don't know. I think you intimidated him. I don't know. I will, Spencer's done it a few times, and I'll talk to Brent. I'll see if Brent wants to do it. I think Spencer's busy. But, Chief, I'm going away. I'm leaving my house.
I mean, you're leaving, like, The house, the neighborhood, the galaxy? What are you doing? How far?
Florida.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm vaccinated now. Are you vaccinated?
No, I already had it, but I think from what I've been reading, it was probably 5 months ago. Another month, I should probably get it. Because what I've been reading now is if you've had it, and, you know, I'm like COVID central here. It appears that if you've had it and you give yourself 5-6 months and you take the vaccine, your antibodies really are stronger than anybody who just A, had it, or B, got the vaccine. It's better. So I might as well.
When you were out, huh? Maddie kept that on the wraps pretty good. You had the virus, huh?
I think I got it at a hospital. I went for a test. With the mask on. So sure enough, yesterday I get this study from Britain. Somebody has to explain to me one day, and whenever, you know, everybody loves the, we love being in America to a certain extent anyway. And I'm absolutely stunned, Joel, by all the stuff that I get from listeners and from, you know, these various sites people stuck me onto regarding the virtually every single study that makes sense to me, that looks like somebody went out of his way to do a good scientific job, I've gotten it from overseas. Everything here is being scrubbed somehow by somebody. But anyway, I guess...
Maybe I'll get Lisa on. She's usually... she's not off on Tuesdays, but maybe I'll try and get her on one time and have her answer your COVID questions for you.
Well, the one yesterday was somebody... You know, who the hell the somebodies are? Somebody spent several months now in Britain analyzing virtually all the cases, and they found that over 20% of the cases, people were infected in hospitals.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
And
no, I have not heard that statistic yet.
Well, you're not going to. It's like I said, it came from Britain. You know, you're not going to. I mean, my point is, I mean, when Carl and I don't know if you ever listened when Carl's on. Carl and I mean, when you look at it, though, it's not... You're not accusing anybody of anything, Joel. I mean, you just observe. I mean, it's all you can do from my end. I don't know what's going on a piece of paper back and forth between people. But there's been 4 or 5 hospitals here in Chicago that are now bigger than God, right? And they've spent billions of dollars on the places in the last however many years. And if you look at them, and, you know, I've had to visit people in there and so forth, I'll tell you this. They are not designed for somebody to walk in with smallpox. They're designed for somebody to walk in with cancer or a gunshot wound or a heart attack. I mean, they don't try and figure out if somebody has an infectious disease when he hits the door. You walk through 100 people before you get to the information desk. So they're not set up. They were not set up last March for people to walk in with something very infectious. They're just not. So it's not surprising. Even a couple of places I had to go for tests, I'd walk by 30 people before they take my temperature. Even in taking your temperature, I mean, they're just not.
We could go on for an hour about this. I mean, the lack of preparedness. I mean, on our health system for this. I mean, I don't know when we had Lisa on the show, but
a few weeks. She was great.
Earlier February of last year, I mean, she was calling health departments. She was calling senators and congressmen and head of infectious diseases at hospitals and saying, what the hell's the plan? And no one had a plan.
No plan.
And I think, no plan at all.
So who's taking who to Florida? Who decided you were going to Florida? Her and she's dragging you with, or what?
I wanted to go somewhere. I mean, I haven't been downtown since last March. Played some golf. I mean, I've just been a hermit and... I just wanted to get out, and grandma's down there, her mom's down there, and wanted to see her. She doesn't want to come home. She doesn't want to come back to Michigan. So I said, hey, we both got our shots. Let's go. And we also had like plenty of frequent flyer, of vouchers and credits from airlines, because we had a couple major trips planned last year, and we're going to use the credits. So I'm going to go down there. Get some nice weather. I mean, I haven't just taken a week off from the markets. I don't want to look at a Quotron. I don't want to talk about the markets. I just want a week of reading a book and just getting away from the markets. And That's what I'm doing. So I'll be back in 2 weeks, and I will be fired up and ready to go for you, Chief. I will not let you down.
Is this a sports book, a history book, a dirty book? What are you bringing?
My brother-in-law gave me a book. I think it's written by Richard Ford. It's a sports. I like to read, I like to read light books, fiction.
Yep.
So it's about a sports writer. Easy book, easy read. I don't want to read about the markets. I don't want to read about philosophy, which I do sometimes. I just need to just clear the head and get ready for the next year and see what it has in store for us. Because it was a long year, Chief. It was a long year.
Hey, good for you. I want one quick question about the markets before you head off.
Sure.
What exactly, we're going to be calling Kenny here in a second. Matter of fact, we probably should be calling Kenny now, Ian. But when I started in the biz, I'll keep this brief. The market was so low, it was kind of obvious that it was only kind of one way for it to go. I've been doing a lot more fundamental analysis on some of these high flyer stocks in the last week, and I thought they were high. I'm stunned at how high they are. I mean, we have retail stocks that are 10 times revenue. Can we possibly grow into this, Joel, or do we have to have a collapse somewhere?
I don't understand these retail stocks. I mean, there's a lot of pent-up demand from the pandemic. We got a whole new economy coming, and I don't see big office buildings being filled or these retail stores. So there's a big transformation coming. I don't invest in those kind of stocks. I'm just kind of an S&P 500 guy, and so as long as the S&P 500 keeps going up, then it's fine with me. But no, I cannot believe some of these retail stocks are at some of these levels.
Well, how much, last question before your vacation, how much power do they really have? I mean, I don't know what it's like up in Detroit, but in Chicago, we've given the city to Target. I mean, we didn't let Walmart into town, not that I'm a huge Walmart fan. Target is now everywhere. Their pricing power is like something I've never seen. Them and Home Depot, I mean, they could double price tomorrow and everybody's powerless. What could you do? Where were you going to go?
I mean, Kmart used to be it. I mean, things ebb and flow, right? And right now, they have the dominance. Amazon is changed retail forever. I don't know. There is nothing. I mean, I don't go to those stores. I don't know who the hell goes to those stores and spends all that money. But
they're mad.
Those companies, they're gonna have a hard time year over year comparisons. So
I don't know.
I'd be careful. I'd be careful on these retail stocks going ahead.
All right, bud. Well, take care of yourself. Enjoy your vacation. SP Futures down 550, NASDAQ is down 18. Come back. We should have Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Ian Kidwell on the board. We have S&P futures down 6.25, NASDAQ futures down 20.50. We have individual stocks in the Dow. We've got, we don't know what happened to Kenny. We've got guys disappearing here this morning. American Express down 49 cents. Nothing major here. We've got Caterpillar, which has been all over the place, down 21 cents. Here's one. Microsoft's down a buck, but it was up a bunch yesterday. But we've got the stocks I'm talking about. Target's now over 200 at 205.35. We had Walmart up like $6 yesterday. These things are really moving, and it's somewhat interesting. I get statistics, as everybody knows, from the various listeners, and some of the stuff. I mean, you know, with the different stuff I read, you kind of get a feel for the stuff. But every once in a while, you get people send something in, and it's and you know that they do a much more, shall we say, succinct. How's that for a word, Ian? It's succinct. View
I like
of this.
It.
And I always try. I mean, what you were a philosophy major, right?
Oh my God, yes.
Now, would you consider me somewhat of a half-assed philosopher, or what?
I wouldn't say half-assed. If I were to say philosopher, I guess.
So what do you got to do to be a philosopher? You got to just.
I guess it depends on what kind you are. You could be studying epistemology, or
what is that?
Epistemology is the theory of knowledge. It studies the human relationship to the world in the most general terms, how we come to know things.
Well, how is it that I made it all these years of education? I don't even know what that meant. It doesn't say much about me, does it?
Well, I'm not going to say anything bad. I didn't know what the word meant before I went to school.
I'm Charles Barkley. Epistle, like, I was like a gun or something. What do you say? We're going to the... In Indianapolis, and as he pulls into Annapolis on the commercial, he's supposed to be driving to the Final Four, and he keeps pronouncing it as in Indianapolis, and then he's in the Annapolis. So, they show up in his business.
How do you mispronounce Indianapolis?
He had it in the Annapolis, so he's driving, and the two guys that are with him, Spike Lee and the other guy, they pull up, and there's a big sign, Annapolis. And the guy goes, I think we're supposed to be in Indiana. He was in the Annapolis. He was in Annapolis.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
One thing that I have noticed that Carl has, as much as we joust back and forth, I've kind of learned a lot from him in the sense of what it has done. You probably have a word for this, Ian. It's extended the timing of my thought process. Is there a word for that?
A word for that? Extending the timing of your thought?
Yeah, instead of
slowing you down?
Well, no, looking at the economic numbers over a longer span.
Ah.
Instead of like a couple of years. And when you do that, one thing you find out is that you actually become very, shall we say, well, I'll use a Southside term, pissed off or tired or of people that argue the short-term crap. There's a constant right or the left bantering of, you know, the left's doing this or the right's doing that, and you guys are bleeps, and you guys are bleeps. Because if you look at the longer-term stuff, people should be able to, all people from the right or the left, should be able to say, this is just a direction we've been going for like a really long time. And it's not, has nothing to do which side it is. This is the road we're on, and we better collectively get off it if we want to. Because otherwise, if all we do is keep fighting amongst ourselves, we're going to stay right at it. And one of our guys, Paul, writes in that he's talking about the national debt. And now, if you go all the way back to, I suppose if I sat for a second while I'm thinking and never be bored with dead air, I could go back and name every president back to 1980. I mean, I'm sure I could, but it would take me a second. But I'm sure everybody could do the same thing. If you go back to 1980, we've had Dems, we've had Republicans, and we're not sure what we had with Trump, but we've got I guess we'll have to call him a Republican. And the national debt has doubled every 8 years, kind of no matter who is in there. Yeah. It's just what we're doing. And no matter what side or the other, they're always going to stop it, and then they never do. And then, but it seems like this is the government we want. You know, it's very much like Rome. We don't want to fight anymore. We want the people from the provinces to fight. We don't want to work anymore. We want the provinces to send grain in. And oh, by the way, debase our currency while you're at it. And we don't care. As long as we get the dole and as long as we have gladiator fights, we're happy. You know, I mean, that's unfortunately the way it went down.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah, bread and circuses. What was the guy used to say? It wasn't bread. What was the other one? It was something in circuses. It wasn't bread. Was it bread?
I'm pretty sure it's bread and circuses.
Okay, well, but so in 1980, the national debt was $0.9 trillion. All right, in 1988, it was $1.8. 2004, it was $3.6. So, you know, 2004 was 7.2. 2012, it went higher. It's 15. 2020, it's about 30. And everybody's figuring in 2028, it's going to be 60. Okay, it's not linear. It doubled every 8 years. You know, and that's just, I mean, it doesn't matter who's president and who isn't. One guy fights a war and won't raise taxes. And the next guy, you know, raises taxes, but oh, by the way, spends so much more that he blows over the taxes he just raised. I mean, it almost, how they do it is all differently. It's all different. But the fact is, nobody seems to care. Because we're extended, and people love the fact. I have a piece of paper here, and as you've obviously seen my office/studio, and I know what I have. I can't say as I can put my hands on all the time, but there was a survey of I don't know how many, you know, whenever people talk about a survey, of course they know what they want to say by the time they're done, but before they even start, I'm sorry. And it had to do with, they interviewed all kinds of Americans and said, you know what, we want the federal deficit to be in balance, or the federal budget to be in balance, but we don't want to cut entitlements, we don't want to cut defense, we don't want to cut like the 10 things out of 10 of the 11 things they spend the money on. Okay, it's interesting. You know, we don't want to extend our credit card debt, but I'm not giving up my Blackhawk tickets at $300 a pop, by the way, even though I'm only making, you know, 40 cents an hour. Okay, well, that's fine. Blackhawk tickets are untouchable, but you want to get out of debt. Yeah. Well, you sent the Blackhawks $12,000 and you're making 15. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a point of view. It's just the way people, you know, look at things. And that's kind of the way we're looking at it. We don't want to cut anything, and yet we're appalled when we see this. Now, the fly in the ointment here is, if there is a push, and I don't know what kind of philosophy this would be, the risk we're running here is in the early 80s when I started the business, well, actually 1980, the government was paying, you know, 10, 11, 12% interest. So even though the in 1980 the national debt was $0.9 trillion, if the interest rates went really the only way they could, which was down, it was going to help that federal deficit. But even so, in the next 8 years, they doubled it. I mean, right now, it seems like if anything untoward happens, I mean, even anything, any return to normalcy is probably going to drive the interest cost of the federal government up by, what, 2 to 3 times? Maybe 4 or 5? So we're talking about a deficit that's doubled in the last 8 years without interest even being, well, it's a small piece of the pie, but now at $30 trillion is where we are right now. The government average interest of what they're paying, I'm going to say, is, let's call it an even 1%. It's probably not even that. It's probably less than that, but let's say it's 1%. So what's 1% of $30 trillion? It's $300 billion, right? Well, that's, you know, it's real money to you and me, but it's not really so much these days when everything's got a T in front of it. But what if that number becomes, you know, 5% or 4%? I mean, can they really do $1 trillion a year in interest when their total tax bringing in from income tax is 1.7? Now we're talking about an interest rate number that's 75% of the total income tax. Now that's a number that I don't see how they can deal with. So okay, now does that mean that you have to inflate the place to the point where that never goes up? And oh, by the way, if you inflate the money, Have you? I mean, I don't know if you learned this in philosophy or in a couple of economics classes, but if you inflate the money enough, you get to pay people back with money that's worth less than they borrowed from you, right?
That might have come up in economics.
Yeah, probably. And so, I mean, are they trying to do that? I mean, what is the game plan here? I mean, we know that they're cutting back on the information. I was mentioning on the way in that they cut back on the money supply numbers, the weekly money supply numbers. And not only that, they scrubbed the money supply, the weeklies, from like the last year or so. By the way, did you ever hear the story of Joe Stalin, how he used to work? You ever take a history class regarding that guy?
No, not at all. Tell me.
Well, say, for instance, I'm like the real big chief, not like the little chief. And I decided, this Ian guy, like, I don't like him all that much. And off you. Okay.
That went fast.
That wouldn't be good for you, right? But now...
Probably not.
But it's not just that, okay? I have to go to your girlfriend's, and I have to take every picture that she may have of you, and I got to get them. I got to wipe you out of your... Wherever you graduated in philosophy, you got to be out of the yearbook, right? I mean, you've got to be scrubbed from the birth records in whatever county you were born. And any picture you might have had on that on anybody's Facebook has to be disappeared. So I have to absolutely wipe you out of history.
Why are you doing that to me for?
Well, I'm just saying that's what Stalin did to people.
Oh, well, I hope you don't do that to me.
No. Greg, maybe. You know. But anyway, so Kathy, I used to help out with the show, and she been buried in with the COVID. She sends me this picture. You'd love this, Ian. This would be perfect for one of your philosophy classes. They had this picture of all these, comrades arm in arm on this bridge. So there's Stalin right next to some guy. It's like me having my arm around you, and you're right next to the guardrail, So the next picture, they've got me right next to the guardrail, and the guy's gone. He's just gone. he was never there. And he's out of history, and he was like a general. So they wiped him out of whatever their military school is. He never graduated. He was never there. Just saying.
Wow.
So that's what we're starting to do now with our money numbers.
Ow.
I mean, are we really becoming Stalin-esque in this country? I mean, what are we doing? We'll show you. You question me about those numbers. How about I never give you those numbers again? Oh, is that the America you grew up to know? I'm going to say no. Everybody say we got a break. Come back. We'll have Mr. Jeff Joseph, hopefully. S&P futures down 375. NASDAQ futures down 250. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Ian Kidwell on the board. We have S&P futures down 375. NASDAQ futures down, actually they're up 75 cents. I have a feeling we're going to be up here today. So we'll see how that works out because we were up huge yesterday. And we have people coming in and saying we're looking for a face-ripping rally in April. Actually would not surprise me because these guys are constantly pouring money at the place, and you know, we'll continue to throw those statistics at you as we get them. But these numbers on the deficit are pretty interesting, aren't they, Ian? I mean, you know, we're doubling. If it was linear, if we were just adding to it every 8 years, if we were, we'd be up at $6.3 trillion if it was a linear increase. If we went up like, you know, $1 trillion every 8 years, but that's clearly not where we're at here. So,
what are we at now?
We're pushing 30.
Trillion.
The official number is 26, but if you add in the off balance sheet stuff, it's like 29.7 or something. And don't ever do this, but I'm going to tell you what not to do. There's a thing called USDebtClock.org. If you ever want to go there. It gives you all these statistics.
I'm doing it now.
Yeah, and it's all kinds of interesting stuff that's on there. And we go there every now and again. But right now these guys have it at 28.1. But there's here's what you have: the federal spending official is 6.7, and then underneath it you'll see right there it'll say federal spending actual is 8.0. So they think there's a trillion four gap between what the federal actually reports and what they actually spent. So it's an interesting world. But you see these numbers and you wonder how you can turn them around. I mean, and the answer clearly is, the answer always is real income. But when you're actually growing, but here's the part that. What we're seeing now, in my opinion, Ian, is that there's something called nominal and otherwise. Okay, I mean, if you just give everybody, I'll ask you, the philosopher king here, if all of a sudden you've got, you know, 15 $1 bills in your pocket, and you walk into the Federal Reserve, and you've got the Washingtons, and you walk in with the Jeffersons, which are the $2 bill, and they do that to everybody. Is anybody any richer?
They're getting bills?
Well, you had a $1 bill, now you get a $2 bill. So we essentially double the amount of money everywhere, equally. So if you had $100 in your pocket, you now have $200. You had $1,000 in your savings account, you now got $2,000.
Okay, and everyone's just flat doubled.
Yeah.
And the only thing under financial consideration is how much money we have in these accounts.
Yeah, everything's just doubled. If you thought your net worth was $1 million, now it's two.
Okay, so my net worth is doubled too.
Right.
So now I have two bicycles.
Right. Well, you don't get two bicycles, you get cash. That's the point. You don't have two bicycles.
Well, I don't think we're, well, I mean, we have more, well, yeah, I guess if we don't have two bicycles then we're not richer. But if we were to have two bicycles instead of two monies, I guess it would seem like we were richer.
Would that count for girlfriends too, if you don't have two girlfriends?
Oh man, yep. I don't know if I'd be richer in that case.
No, I mean, no, that's my whole point. You still have the one bicycle, so you're not richer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but right now, do we feel richer with the government printing money and sending it to everybody?
Well, I haven't gotten any of it, so.
Well, what if you suppose you did?
Oh yeah, I'd feel richer.
Okay, but collect
two bicycles.
Well, therein but therein lies the rub. If you got the check and your buddy didn't, you're richer in relation to him. Right?
Yes. But and they are to me, yes.
And they are to you now.
Yeah.
So that's what you just talked about in with your philosophy degree.
Oh, my God.
Is really, it's what I've been bitching about.
I'm never going to live this one off.
Well, but I'm saying it's what I've been bitching about now for a year. It's never even. Therein lies the rub. If everybody just had twice as much money, what good would it do anybody? Nothing. If I owed you $50, guess what? I now owe you $100, right?
I see.
If it was that even, if the price of bread doubled, but your paycheck doubled, you wouldn't care, would you?
I mean, I'd be a little surprised, for sure.
That it was even?
Well, yeah, that both the price of bread doubled and my paycheck doubled.
So you are suspicious enough to think that nothing ever doubles, it's never even.
I guess. I'm just saying it would be, if I was living my life and my paycheck doubled, well, I'd be surprised. And then if the price of bread doubled, too, I'd be equally surprised.
Right. So what I'm saying, but right now is when what we're doing is some people are winning and some people are losing.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies, and my issue is the people that I know always are the ones that are losing.
Mm.
Not so much losing as in, you know, can't live or can't go to work, but they're not the ones, you know, they're getting the $1,400 check when somebody somewhere else is still getting paid, you know, $1 million when his business is closed or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not in unemployment or he or she, he's actually still getting his check. And when what's he doing? Nothing. The place is closed.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is can we? And the more government gets involved, the more they start picking winners. In my mind, and what I've found is every one of these laws that I read or any kind of rule or stuff, it's getting to the point where I go two paragraphs into it and I can tell who wrote it.
For these laws?
Yeah, just to mean who which lobbyist is pushing who.
That's pretty funny.
And the part about I mentioned it last week. If anybody didn't hear it, there's a little known. Well, it's not a little known, but everybody knows about the 14-hour checks. Everybody knows about the PPP, and there's a second PPP, and there's also this thing called the Employee Retention Act. Right, and
what's that?
It's part of this. Well, it started with the first program under Trump, the first big hunk of money they threw out there, and then it was modified with the second one. Now it was modified and extended again under the one that was signed in March. So it essentially says, if I was forced to shut down, or if I had a big drop in my revenue. And some of the money wasn't covered by the PPP loan. In other words, if I had a restaurant and you worked at the restaurant and I was forced to shut down, they're going to give me money where I can pay you, either pay you or pay me back for keeping you on salary over the time that we were forced to shut down.
Interesting.
But now the problem is the way it's written, there's either a revenue test, which last year was 50%, now this year versus 2019 is 20%. Okay, or we could have had a partial or complete shutdown by a governmental authority because of COVID. And then there is essential businesses and non-essential businesses. Now, essential businesses are your food stores, are your hardware stores, they're your banks, actually brokerage firms, which we are, so anyway in the financial thing. So we're an essential business. Okay, so if you're an essential business, if you're not absolutely had to shut down, if you're able to either through home or on the bus or someplace, if you could hang in there with your clients and service them, like if we brought one or two people, we always were able to get somebody in here, PTI. Okay, so I knew the only bridge that was open was the one over by, of course, this is the riot stuff, which doesn't count. Was the one over by the post office. But I was able to do the show every morning, and we had one or two people here for PTI, even though at one point my nephew had the COVID, so my brother was home for 2 weeks, and then somebody else was home. We always managed to get somebody in here. And we really, I'm never going to lie, so under no circumstances could we ever not put in a trade or talk to a client. Okay, so we were not totally shut down. There's no doubt about that. Now, the question is, were we partially shut down? Well, hell, the whole loop was shut down. We didn't entertain a client in the office for a year. I guess that's partially shut down, isn't it? I mean, by any common sense, the restaurants were shut down, so I couldn't even meet somebody for coffee somewhere, right? So yeah, did it affect us? Were we partly shut down? The answer is yes. Okay, but because we're essential, none of that counts, which is fine. You know, we don't need the dough. But however, if you read this thing and you start looking at the examples, you could just tell that a restaurant lobbyist wrote the goddamn thing. Because if you're a restaurant now, you're not an essential business. Now, we're not going to do much for the guys that are closed. They're just out. If you just said, I'm out of business, I lost my money, and I'm just out of here, you're just done. You know, Ian's Hot Dogs is toast. We're not giving you a nickel, right, because you're gone. However, if it's Ian's Pizza Joint, and you were forced to close your eight tables inside, but now you don't have to worry about the revenue test because you were forced to close because of a city law or order or something, whatever it was. Never a outpeep from Mayor Lori. But you could have sold 10 times the revenue through the front door selling pizzas. Yet they're going to send you a check for all the salaries for however many months.
Oh, wow.
Because that's... So I'm sitting there reading... Who else other than restaurants or carry-out places could possibly have been able to, you know, how could your business, like, double when you were supposedly shut down? Okay, it even says there, if your bar was forced to shut down, but you doubled up on pizzas, you're okay. Now, obviously, any other business isn't like that. I mean, Lakeside Bank's across the street. They managed to get where we do our banking. They're great people. They managed to get one teller and one other person, a security guard, in there in the Board of Trade building every day. There was never a day where I couldn't go over there and do my and PTI's banking. Okay? Were they partially shut down? They got boards in front of the place. The L's are shut down. The bridges are shut down. Sure, they were partially shut down, right? But if somehow or another they manage to maintain their revenue less than a 50% hit, they don't get a nickel.
Oh, wow.
I mean, but you read this stuff, and now, is that even in your mind? I'm going to say no.
It does not. No, it doesn't sound like that.
No, it sure doesn't. And if you're a hardware store, and you were partially shut down, and you were able to somehow hang in there, and your people need screws, and you walked out the front door and hand them a box of screws. If you manage to maintain 81%, or actually 51% of your revenue, you're not getting a nickel. But if you're the place next door that is the guitar store, or something, and you sold 10 times as many guitars, because you're not an essential business. But people just came to the front door because everybody's at home wanting to learn how to play the guitar on their own. There's nothing better to do. And you sold 100 times more guitars last year. All of a sudden, you were partially shut down. You're going to get a money back, $5,100 a month for every employee you got there.
So was there ever a case when some business or something or other decided to just close for the day, the month, the year when they hit their 49% mark? You know, they were.
Well, they didn't know. The law came after.
Oh, it came afterwards.
Yeah.
So no one could have played it.
Well, no, the first PPP, and that's one thing. If you got money back in the first PPP, you can't use this to cover twice. So if you've already got your money back in the PPP for playing people, what the enforcement in it is on this, I have no idea. But I mean, or is there enforcement, or could you lie? I don't know. I mean, we're not going to. I don't think. I would hope most people wouldn't. But the no, you can't. You're not supposed to count it twice. But no, I mean you couldn't. Well, going forward, look this way. There's one more quarter. Going forward, you could probably engineer let's put it this way. Income you can mess with pretty easily. I mean, come on. It's hard in a brokerage firm. Everything's audited. Plus, we wouldn't anyway. But by and large, it's pretty hard to mess with revenue. Right? Sorry. I mean, because it's actually money you took in, so either did or you didn't, right? I mean, so what are you going to do? I guess if you got paid cash, you could keep it in your back pocket till the second day of the next quarter, but I mean, not many people get paid cash anymore, and surely a brokerage firm doesn't, right? Or a bank or somebody like that. I mean, if you were a pizza place, yeah, but then again, you don't have to worry about it because once you're partially shut down, you don't have an income test. But when you go through these bills, it's kind of hard. I mean, it's funny. I wonder. Another. I don't think I've ever had a philosopher in here before. I'm going to ask you this question. There's a piece of paper. And we got a few minutes to break. There's a piece of paper, an article here that somebody wrote years ago and had to do with why do people become part of like parties, or why do you get on the right or the left? And I'm going to run this by you. Is it, it says that most people are rational, and you realize that your vote in this country doesn't really count for squat. Now, it doesn't mean you want to lose it. Doesn't mean like you don't. You know, it's not an honor. Doesn't mean that, you know.
Yep.
I mean,
I'm with you.
But the fact is, it doesn't mean squat, really, one vote. So is it worth your time to get the list of all the idiots, incredibly intelligent politicians running, say, in our district, and go through all their biography, all their views, all their everything, and go person to person? Or do you just say, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, whatever my side wants, those must be the right people, and the other side are the crummy people? So you essentially offload your decision-making process to a group that you somewhat feel, you know, that you're acclimated to. Is that a fair term? So in other words, you don't, the thing in Georgia regarding the voting rights, you know, if you're from the left, you know, this is an outrage. You're taking people's right vote against from you. You know, you're making it harder for people to vote. This is a constitutional slam and blah blah blah. Okay, I understand that. Now on the other side, it's all these people shouldn't be voting anyway. They're making it too easy. Nobody even knows if the person who votes even exists. I mean, what are we doing here? We're 2 years into this mail-in voting, and already we got people, you know, dumping carloads of votes on places we can't tell who the hell sent them in. And there's a little bit of truth to both sides here. But how many people do you think have actually read the damn thing and are making their own decision? What percentage?
Well, extraordinarily low, probably. I don't even know where I would go if I wanted to read the thing and I lived in Georgia.
Well, I did something stupid. I read about half of it here.
Someone's prepared.
Well, you know what? All it did was confuse the shit out of me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't think... I've thought about doing that, going, reading... When there's a hot topic like this, going and reading the actual text itself, but I don't think it's designed to do that, to be readable that.
But
I don't think
it's
profitable.
Well, you can sense when you read it that they're making things somewhat more restrictive. You know, every time there's a change where they let you know what they're doing, it's, you know, it used to be that you could, the ballots had to be in, just for an example, the day before the election. Okay, so now they got to be in 3 days before the election. Okay, so you sense that there's a little bit of a restriction there. There might have been 15. You know, you could put every precinct would have a again. I'm just talking off the top of my head. Every precinct would have a ballot deposit box that you could put your ballot in up to the close of regular voting. Now all of a sudden, not every precinct's got one. There's a central location, and it's got to be in the day. I mean, you can sense, you know, some kind of restrictions going on here. But I had absolutely no idea that here's 49 other states. I don't know what the average is. I don't know what the other guys are. I don't know that, you know, some states don't even have a place to deposit. Other people, I mean, you have no idea whether it's, you know, you're on foot or horseback in regards to what other people are doing. You don't know how restrictive it is on an absolute scale. You know, it's slightly more restrictive, or maybe more than slightly more restrictive than it was, you know, last time. But you don't know if it's, you know, it's way less restrictive, say, than
compared
Illinois,
to other states,
compared,
yeah,
to other states, or compared to. And so you're reading this, and as somebody trying to figure out what my opinion is, to be honest with you, I had no idea, and I think I'm at least of moderate intelligence, but I don't know. Is 2 days before horrible and 1 day good? Or, I mean, what are you doing here? I mean, if I was cheating and trying to dump in a whole bunch of votes, I mean, I don't know, you know, how I would cheat against this one or against the other. But it seems like there's a yin and a yang between, you somehow want to separate your name from your ballot so everybody can't, if somebody wanted to, they can't figure out that this Ian guy always votes Democratic or always votes Republican. You want to, obviously, if you go to the precinct, nobody knows how you vote, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, if in your position, it seems ideally that you wouldn't be reading the law itself to do this kind of comparison. Ideally, there would be some kind of article, not necessarily a news article, but maybe like a scholarly article that you could read that would do that kind of comparison and argumentative work, you know, for you, that would be accessible.
You mean one that was honest and didn't take a right wing or a left wing lean to it.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, there are professors of I don't know, that's the problem, I guess, is, you know, there are professors of political science, and there are specialists in electoral systems, electoral people who focus on electoral politics, but I don't know where they're writing on stuff like this. I'm sure someone is, but where's the journal?
Well, now you run right into what is the state of today's news media? And, you know, the people on the right are claiming it's all on the left, and the people on the left are claiming it's all fine. I mean, when I was your age, Ian, there were four newspapers in Chicago. Now there's
four.
Yeah, now there's what, one and a half? I wouldn't even call the Tribune a real paper anymore compared to what it was.
Hey, I'm sorry, I don't even really read the paper a whole lot. I like the I think the Sun Times. Greg gets one.
It was like half a paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, but it's nowhere near the four papers you used to have. I mean, everybody claims that the internet, that you have greater access to news than you ever have. Yet there's half as many reporters as there used to be. So is there more good news or less? I mean, you're not going to find in the Tribune somebody given a budget to research the Florida thing and write a two or three page, 2 day article in the Tribune regarding the Georgia law and the good points and the bad points and have a fair. You're not going to see that.
Well, no way. I also heard that that industry has just changed so much since the turn of the century. Just because of the internet, I had a friend whose dad was a reporter, like someone who just wrote articles for a newspaper in Los Angeles, and he lost his job. And the problem is there's just no more jobs anymore in that regard for him when he's out looking, because so many people will just make content for free just to put it up, or will be freelancing.
Oh, it's alleged content.
Yeah.
It's alleged content.
Alleged content, sure, but people producing alleged content nonetheless.
But people don't want to pay.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to pay, you get what you pay for, right?
Mm-hmm.
SP futures down 475. NASDAQ futures now up 250. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jack. I'm Tom Howe. All right, man. Ian, well, we're having some problems here with the phones, but we'll get this figured out. SP futures down 2.25, NASDAQ futures up 14. We're putting the whip to the NASDAQ here all of a sudden. They're both down when we came in. Communication is always good in this communicative world we're in. Around the rest of the world, we've got the, again, these guys careful because they were closed yesterday, over in Europe. They were closed for the Easter Monday, but the DAX is up 170 today. Now it's catch up. 1.1%, FTSE up 83, 1.2%, CAC around up 31.5%. We're in Asia now. The Nikkei was the only one open here, yesterday, but they're up, they're down 392 today. They're up yesterday. It's 1.3%. And the Shanghai is up. They're trading. They're down one. They call that flat. Hang Seng is still closed. So they're not trading today as of yet. In the U.S., yesterday we had the Dow up 373, big day. S&P up 58, NASDAQ up 225. So, almost a 1.5% increase across the board. New records pretty much everywhere. Bonds are minus, 10 years down 2 basis points to 1.69. The Bund, minus 0.30, right where it's been for a long time. Japan, positive 0.11. We've got oil up $1.05, but still not back to 60, 59.70. Brent, up $1.02 to 63.17. Natural gas up 5 cents, 2.56. We've got gold is, up 7.60, 17.36. Silver up 26 cents, 25.04. Copper down 5 cents, 4.08. And we've got crypto, we've got Bitcoin down $62. Been quiet the last few days, 58,899. It's been kind of hanging steady right about there. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Traffic? Let's see. For traffic, looks like the roadways are pretty clear. We have a little congestion.
Where is everybody this week? We came in this morning, there's nobody on the road either.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. It seems like the roads are clear. It seems like there's a little congestion coming in on the Stevenson due to some road work, but that's all to say. And regarding the weather, we got a high of 77 in Chicago. It's a little bit cloudy, but there shouldn't be any rain like there was yesterday, so that's nice. In Phoenix, there's a high of 90, and it's cloudy there as well. But it should be a pretty mild day over there as well. And for sports, not a whole lot of teams playing over the Easter holiday weekend.
The NCAAs, you got the Cubs.
But, well, we got the NCAA, that's right. Let's see.
Baylor,
that's right.
All
Baylor
the way,
won.
The Baylor Bears.
Yeah, 86-70. I don't, what happened with the Cubs?
They won. They won again.
That's right. I was biking down Clark, actually, and I saw the stadium going, the game going.
Yeah, they got some people there, and, they beat, who the hell they beat? They beat, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, they beat Milwaukee. Yeah, it's, the pitcher, was interesting. His dad was in the stands, and, it was kind of fun. So do you have anybody, or what are we doing here?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the phone lines, but we're not getting a dial tone right now.
Well, that's cool. Then it's you and me.
It's you and me. Yeah. I'll keep working on it, though.
All right.
Let's see what we can do.
Remember when the phones, I actually, like, used to work and stuff?
Well, that was before my time.
I mean, just in general, phones, when they put them in, you had these copper lines, they always work, they're idiot-proof, and we don't want no stinking copper lines anymore or anything like that, do we?
The ones you got here have so many buttons.
Oh, no, we're long buttons. Anyway, it looks like we're going to be, I think the market is going to continue to inch up here. I don't know what any kind of catalyst would be for it to go even higher. Although, I mean, we are reaching those points where people are sending me, we're reaching, margin, a record yet again. We've got those kinds of things going. And, the one interesting part about yesterday is even though the market was up huge, The VIX was actually up, which is what you don't normally see. It was up a full point, but then again, it had been down dramatically on Thursday, in addition to the 3-day weekend. So we've got that going on. Ever since the VIX first started out, I never was convinced that the calculation going in and coming out of the weekend was accurate. I mean, it always shows it kind of going up a little on, or going down on Friday and come back up on Monday. And I'm not so sure that that's... I don't think the thing handles the 2 days off, whatever model they're using, and 3 days off makes it worse. I don't think that the thing handles the two and three days off as well as it should. So whatever that means. But so you sometimes when it looks like it's up on a Monday after a 3-day weekend, it may not necessarily be up that much. The whole number here at on the VIX, which is 1788, is down from where it's been, really for months now. Now, as Mike was saying yesterday, it's still pretty low. I mean, it's still pretty high going into a summer, because normally going into summer, it's, normal years, 12, 13, 14, if that. So pushing 18 going into, May, June is actually historically very high. Now, we have reasons for that. We have all kinds of, massive amounts of money flying around. We've got, certain bills on the table. We've got Biden fighting with this infrastructure program. And, the question is, where's that money going to go? Who's going to get it? And obviously, if we had a lobbyist, he'd be working right now. And I'm not so sure that, you can't. If there's reincarnation, I don't know, would I want to come back as a lobbyist? I don't know. You'd be wealthy. It depends on the times. Right now, if you're a lobbyist right now and you can't get a job, you're going to be like a really awful lobbyist. Just saying. I mean, because of the money flying around, when you start talking about, a trillion or $2 trillion bill, I mean, there's every page is just dripping with dollar bills or 50s or 100s or whatever you want to call it. It's really pretty incredible. I don't know, I don't know how, any other way you look at it, but I mean, clearly is the a lot of the energy in this country now is being spent by a lot of smart people, and I'm not saying these guys are dummies, they're not, by a lot of smart people is somehow getting your hand in, your thumb into the government pie. And, to a certain extent, it was always that to a point. I just think it's got to the point now where it's even, it's even like worse. I mean, if you're not involved in this COVID testing, if you're not involved in making gloves, if you're not involved in something, I mean, you clearly have missed the boat. I mean, I think the, if PTI Securities had a sub that, made masks or something for the right person, for hospitals or something, I think we'd be doing pretty well. You wonder how this stuff even works, but but right now the market looks very quiet this morning, which is sort of interesting after a big move, but it doesn't look like it's going down at all. Now the question is, where do you want to put your scratch right now? I mean, we have some people that are coming after me wanting to be involved in these metals, because it has been logical for a long time that if we're going to sort of keep pouring money in the system, that the metals should go up. Yet they haven't. They've had some runs. They're up some, but they're not up like you would expect. And now the question is, are they late bloomers? Are they something now that the rose is off the plant or what? That we're now, are people, is that kind of speculative money going into Bitcoin and now no longer into gold? What exactly is Bitcoin? Is more people get involved in it, banks and whatever, all more people are saying what a great thing it is just because they're involved in it. But it hasn't changed. It still has no basis. If it was gone tomorrow, wouldn't be like you'd be getting gold, like you'd be getting, a barrel of oil, you'd be getting anything. However, right now, I'm not so sure you want to short it. Yet, what does that mean? We're up into the trillions of dollars worth of alleged wealth that are in these things. Now, what happens if all of a sudden one day they fall apart? Does that mean, can you even deduct those losses? I mean, and how can you deduct them? And where can you deduct them? Are they part of the capital gains? Are they a capital asset? I mean, probably. I'm not so sure I would think of them as that, but I guess they are. So it would be $3,000 a year, kind of the rest of your life. So the risk people are taking by buying in here, thinking that your risk is, 2% to the upside or 2% to the downside. And what if the stuff is just gone? I mean, what are you going to do with that? Can you even take that loss? I mean, there's a million questions that you wonder if people are even asking themselves across the board here. Yeah, but it's new, and there's people that are taking their check from the government, and they're just piling it in the market, and they're piling it in to stocks that just go up every day. They're called momentum stocks, and to a certain extent, I mean, I think most people are jealous they weren't into them early, right? I mean, it's just I would like nothing better to be involved in some stock I think is worth $10, and if I buy it at 20 and 2 days later it's trading 200, I guess I'll take that. I mean, you'd rather be lucky than smart, right? In a lot of ways. But the question is, the question I get every day, and this is the difference between a person who actually manages money and actually keep count versus somebody who just shoots from the hip, shall we say, is my question always is, what do I do for somebody today? I mean, somebody's going to come in and they're going to say, I want to buy XYZ. I want to buy the Qs. I want to buy the Fangs. I want to buy Lulu. I want to buy the cloud stocks. I want to do these kinds of things. And you have to be careful that you can't trade last year's market. So you have to be very careful that you don't just, well, it was up last year, so I'll buy it this year, because we really want to trade this year's market. You know, which obviously is hard to do because nobody's got a Ouija board or a crystal ball or whatever kind of thing you use to see this year. So what do you do? Somebody will say, I want to be in the queues because they were up last year. Well, what that really means is we want to be in the queues last year. Now, is that could be the world's best investment this year, but maybe not. I mean, clearly last year you wanted to be an Apple all year, all the time. Now this year, not so much. I mean, I'll kick up the, so far. I mean, it doesn't mean that right now Apple, since it hasn't gone anywhere, could be the absolute best buy on the board. I mean, who the hell knows? I mean, last year, this is now with the, you know, the pre-split price. Last May, Apple was $60. And it traded as high as, I'm going to get it, on 125. It traded 145. And now it's 125. So, this particular year, you don't want to be an Apple, even though the market's making new highs every day. Yet, last year, I mean, if you had everything in Apple, you were a happy camper. So the question is, we have a lot of people, and a couple of places that I help trade with, that wanted the beginning of this year, they wanted everything in Apple, and now they're not happy because the market's to the moon and Apple's not. So, you have to be very. And this is not new. This is not new. When I was in grad school, and I want to go into how many years ago that was, is they used to at the University of Chicago, they had a group. I was never involved in it, but they had this group that was the Center for Statistics and Investing and all kinds of stuff. And they actually went through all the mutual funds at the time, and there were nowhere near as many then as there are now. And these were actively managed funds. These weren't index funds or things. I mean, I'm sure they had them back then, but there weren't very many of them. They were actively managed funds. And they found that, as counterintuitive as it would seem, what you wanted to do is you wanted to put your money in to the fund managers that had did the worst job the year before, not the best. Because it was very rare for somebody to have two solid years in a row. It was very difficult. Because what ends up happening, I mean, I've mentioned this before, is when you're an active manager, if you have, say I want to, if I was Big Cap Bob and you put your money into Chief's Big Cap account, now we don't do this, but if we had a Big Cap account, I would look at, say, the OEX where I traded. These are the 100 biggest stocks on the CBOE, so there was a few that weren't in there. So say we had Chevron and a couple others. So we're talking about the 100 biggest stocks. Now, how exactly are you going to beat the market, or how am I going to beat the market? Well, I look there and I say, let's see, Mr. Weber, IBM should be 2.5% of the basket if I'm going to just equal the top 100. We hate IBM. Screw IBM. All right, we're going to be half of 1%. We're going to have it in there, but we're instead of 2.5%, instead of 3,000 shares of IBM with this $1 billion somebody just gave me, we're going to be 1,000 shares of IBM. Okay, that's fine. So we're going to underweight IBM. And then somebody's going to get to, geez, what about Home Depot? Ah, man, I was there yesterday, and I think the place was mobbed. So instead of Home Depot being 1.5%, or we should buy you know, 1,800 shares of Home Depot, we're going to buy 3,000. We're going to overweight Home Depot. Then somebody's going to say, what about Boeing? Ah, man, those planes don't even fly. Screw Boeing. We're not going to do them at all. Okay, so they're not even in. So what you end up doing is, even though you're swearing and not liking stocks, or you like this one or that one, you're fighting over which ones you have, at the end of the day, your basket has different percentages in it than the S&P 100 would have. And if you're right, if the S&P 100 makes 4% next year, you're going to make 5.5 or 6. It's not like you're going to make, you know, 12. I mean, it's not going to happen unless you're down to like one or two stocks and you happen to pick the two that actually run up, which is really hard to do. But people have done that, which is going to be the end of my story here. But is so what ends up happening is you underweight or overweight, and if you're right, now the question is how many years in a row can you do that? And it's the rare bird that can do it many years in a row, because you end up having to say, well, you know, Honeybell's been my horse for 3 or 4 years. It can't be the horse this year. Most people don't say, I'm selling my Honeywell and I'm now going to underweight. An example of that was back before 99, one of the guys, it was a big firm in Ohio, an acronym will go nameless, and they were so overweight at Cisco that they couldn't see straight. So for the, you know, however many years I think they were part of the IPO. Well, they ran Cisco from, you know, single digits all the way up to 65, and it probably was, I'm going to say, 40% of the guy's portfolio, 50, who knows. So he was the number one money manager of that size in the country for 4 or 5 years. And all of a sudden, Cisco went down, and he still had every single share of Cisco that he owned. Now, because it's very unusual for somebody to say, you know, Cisco's the beautiful girl who brought me to the date, or to the dance, by the way, I think I'm dumping her halfway through the dance and going home with somebody else. I mean, people just don't necessarily do that. I mean, it's the very rare person, and it's, even though I'm not a massive, blinding follower of Warren Buffett, you can see where Warren Buffett will be involved in a company, and 2 years later, he said, you know, I screwed up and I'm out. Well, sometimes he's wrong getting in, sometimes he's wrong getting out. Being right or wrong, I mean, that happens to everybody. But at least he's not, you know, but there are people who, if Cisco put them on the map, well, you couldn't get a share of Cisco out of them no matter what. You could offer them $200 for it, and then we'll sell it to you. So, I mean, it's very rare. So when you talk about people doing better than the market, or your stocks, that if you have these cloud companies, at some point you're going to be the one that has to say, all right, I've the market's been up, you know, pick a number, 5% or 10% the last 3 years, and guess what? I've been in all of these cloud stocks, and I've made 20, and I've done really, really friggin' good for the last 5 years. Why don't I just, you know, off these things and start over? That's not in the DNA of most people, because if they like the stock in the beginning, they're taking it all the way to the end. And if you ask them where it's going, the answer is very simple. It's going up. It doesn't really matter where. So, I mean, are we reaching the point where if people really looked at some of the stuff they do now? I mean, one of the things that, I don't know if this is a philosopher question, Ian, but if your dad wanders in and says, I've got, you know, 20,000 shares of ExxonMobil because my dad worked there and I've, you know, it's got the Exxon, and I'd say, well, is he still alive? No. Do you think he cares whether you have a stack or not, type of thing? I mean, so the question I always ask is, okay, it's worth $2 million. If you didn't have the stock, and you didn't have any money, and I walked in and just dropped $2 million in front of you in $100 bills, would you take every single last $100 bill and put it in ExxonMobil stock?
Would I?
Your dad. And the answer normally is, well, hell no. Why would I do that? But I already have it. Well, if I could, one message that you can, I mean, it's not trading advice, it's not anything like that, because I can't and don't give that. The one message I can give to people, look at your, this is what a trader does, look at your portfolio every day as if it was just like willed to you. You don't have to keep it. You can do whatever you want. If you had nothing but cash, would you put it together the exact same way it is now? And I'm going to say virtually every person is going to say no. So just don't be reluctant to change it. If you say, no, if it was today, I'd have $1 million in IBM, not two. Well, sell $1 million. And then you get the, well, then I got to pay taxes on it. What about this? What about that? I mean, I will say this, Ian. If I had a dime for every dollar somebody screwed up on by not selling something because of taxes and they want to pay the taxes, I'd be a very, very wealthy man.
Hmm.
You know, so, I mean, these are simple common sense questions that you really can't ask somebody else. You got to ask yourself. If I was starting today with just a hunk of money, would my portfolio look like this? And I'd say most people, the answer is no. And if it isn't, you've got to get there. Now, why do I say something like this? I'm not going to be able to teach you in 2 minutes what it's like to be a trader, Ian, but basically, when you're a trader, you make a market and you end up with the positions that other people, where are you in these things? Well, I'm two bid at 2 1/8. All right, I'll sell you 20. I don't know if I'm bullish, bearish, or whatever. I have no opinion on the stock, and all of a sudden I'm long it, right? Well, if it's a call, I'm short if it's a put. And so at the end of the day or the next morning, usually the leftovers, the dribble that you have in your account, is nothing anything you would have designed. You just have it. It's the leftovers from the day before. Hopefully you're at least hedged to where if it goes up or down, you're not going to get hurt. But it's very rarely what you would have put together on your own. You know, that's why a retail person has such an advantage. You put something in at a price. If you don't get it, you don't get it. If you do, it's your price. If you lose, well, you lose. But at least it was your idea. Every day a trader sits there and says, well, I don't want this. I'd rather have this. How do I get from point A to point B? Where a retail person generally falls in love with their positions just because they have them. Well, I've got 1,000 shares of Halliburton. Do you like Halliburton? I don't know. I'm not even sure what they do anymore. But I've had it for so long, I guess I have it. Well, do you want to get rid of it? No, why would I want to get rid of it? I've got it. Okay. It comes down to that. Why don't people constantly adjust? What I'm saying right now, the message here is it is a time to adjust. It is to look at your portfolio, see if you're happy with it, and if you're not, I mean, I think you need to make some kind of a change. And you always can. You can go to cash, you can do something, you can protect it. God help you if you get a new broker that knows what he's talking about, but nobody wants to do that because you got to stay where you are and pay somebody a percent and a half to do nothing. That's the world. So in regards to you, what are you doing? You're taking your LSATs now?
Me? Yeah. I'm studying. I'm taking practice ones. I'm about burnt out on logic games. This summer, I'm going to take them and be done with it.
Why is it that everybody takes? This has been a huge change. When I was taking those tests, well, I didn't take the LSAT, but I took the one for the MBA. What is that? What do you call that one? I don't know, whatever it is.
Oh, I don't know.
But in those days, you essentially were told not to prepare. I don't think anybody made any money preparing people. And if you took it the second time and you did better the second time, people got both scores and they'd say, okay, well, he took it the second time, he did better, so what? When I was talking to some people.
That was the attitude?
Yeah, and then now I talked to some people this weekend that said their granddaughter or grandson's in college and they've taken the SAT like 4 times and they keep going up 2 points. Well,
the SAT?
ACT.
Oh, the ACT.
And they're going up 2 points every time. What's the point of that?
Well, I mean, there's probably some name for it, some kind of tragedy. You know, I think maybe it would be better and probably still just as accurate if no one studied and it just kind of gauged your intuition, you know, how good you were at taking the LSAT when you just, you know, came in one Saturday morning and, you know, you weren't hungover and you got good sleep and you just took it. But because everyone's studying, you're going to get measured against everyone else who's studying, so... You know, I mean, hell, I'd like it the way you had it, but what am I going to do?
Well, but if you go up 2 points the second time, why is that? You're not any smarter. It just means you took it once, you did a little better the second time. And which is the score you even count?
Well, with the LSAT, all the scores are permanent.
Well, that's what I mean. Aren't they in the ACT?
No, actually. You only submit the one. Okay, it's kind of funny, actually. So you only submit the one you want. But for some people... There's also this thing called a super score, which I guess some colleges accept, some colleges didn't. This was when I was applying 5 years ago. And the super score is, you know how on the ACT there's sections like math, reading, science, reasoning, etc. The super score is all the times you took it, you take the best individual scores in those categories, put them together, and make yourself an imaginary score out of an imaginary
an
test.
Imaginary score. I like that.
Because of course you never took a test that got that highest score with the highest in every category. but you took individual tests and did best on, you know, maybe one time you're really good at science and then the next time you're really good at math, and then you super score it and you've got the imaginary test where you're really good at science, really good at math, really good at reading.
What if you took the worst?
Well, who wants to do that? But
so if I was a school, I'd take the worst and then average them.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's probably a better way to do it, for sure.
God.
You know, I mean, it seems like you can't trick your way through it. If you're, you know, there's no tricks to get around it that way. You just got to sit down and take it.
All right, so in my day, when you took it once, and there was no massive amount of business. Now we got a $1 billion business involved here, and at the end of the day, we've gotten nowhere, have we?
Yeah, well, it's different.
Well, but except that there's a lot of people making an awful lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah, I know. I got a friend, and one of his his mom is she works in the test prep industry. It's huge.
Oh, I can imagine. SP futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 1. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.